Welcome to this month's Baltic Triangle podcast with me, Mick Ord.
And me, Mark Reeson.
This time round, I've been speaking to the man behind the Liverpool Internet Exchange, a not-for-profit organisation which you ought to know about, particularly if you're a Liverpool fan, because they were behind the free Wi-Fi, which 750,000 people had the chance to access during the club's recent homecoming following their European Champions League victory.
This is what an internet exchange does. Ajax Liverpool being an internet exchange for the Liverpool community region, this is what we should be doing to help the area.
And bucking the recent trend of me interviewing brewers, I've gone for a teetotal approach this month. And I've met with the founder of Liverpool-based 92 Degrees Coffee Bars, the most recent of which has just opened in the Baltic.
What the Baltic Creative have created is a space where just brilliant companies can work from. And one of the things that we're really proud of to be part of the Baltic is 92 Degrees is the place where they can bring external businesses from the Baltic, but they can also meet themselves, you know, in here as well, with a nice cup of coffee and a sandwich.
And we'll be hearing from Jack a little bit later. If you were one of the 750,000 people that lined the streets of Liverpool for their European Champions League homecoming, you should have noticed the ease of which you were able to download data while the team bus was making its way through the city. Or maybe you just took the pics or filmed the bus and enjoyed the whole celebration without thinking too much about how it was facilitated. But the fact that much of the city was Wi-Fi free that day was down to the Liverpool Internet Exchange, which is a not-for-profit local organisation made up of small businesses from the Liverpool City region who've banded together to improve the city's digital infrastructure, which is a non-for-profit local organisation made up of other local businesses from the Liverpool City region who've banded together to improve the city's digital infrastructure during such big events. Matt Wilson has been working with the internet for more than 20 years, and he explains why it's needed in the region.
We've lagged behind many cities for too long, and if you look at Manchester, Warrington, London, Cardiff, Leeds, those cities ultimately have far better connectivity than we've got, and we now want to see us further ahead than those cities. So, you know, if we improve that infrastructure, the pipes and plumbing of the city, I think the city itself will be far better in the future.
Now, your company, Baltic Broadband, plays a key role in Ajax Liverpool. Who else is a member?
So we've got, many people might think, oh, well, it's full of large companies, that sort of thing. But the way we work is it's one member, one vote. We're a non-for-profit membership driven organization. So apart from my business, we have a lot of local businesses which are providing services, such as Marlan, who are they provide situational awareness solutions for the maritime industry. Vive Technologies, which are an internet service provider. National Telecoms, a place called Does Liverpool, which is a maker space where people can make devices. And the list is endless. I mean, there's a list on our website, but a lot of the people who are on it, even like MGISS, which is, you probably know Mike Derricott, who's a local business here in the Baltic Triangle. These are businesses who've come together and said, we want to help Ajax Liverpool, we want to be a member, and we want to improve the infrastructure of Liverpool. So it's ultimately small businesses from this region.
And why did you set up in the first place?
I've been providing internet since 1994. That's when I got into the industry. And I've been frustrated with the lack of good infrastructure for my businesses. People came to me and said to me, Matt, why don't you do something about it? Our business is struggling as well. Our region of Liverpool doesn't have good connectivity. I can't get good connectivity at home. Our kids can't get it in school. And our businesses are struggling, and it's put us way back in terms of the league, or certainly in the UK, but Europe alone. There's people in far worse, better off than countries than ourselves who've got much faster internet access than us. So it's absolutely ridiculous. So I decided to do something about it and did it to bring everybody together, all of the providers together in the UK, starting with the smaller businesses, as a membership-led organization to make it better for everybody, no matter which ISP, internet service provider, that you're on.
So with, say, Liverpool's Homecoming, did you have to pitch for that business? How was it paid for?
Right, so Liverpool's Homecoming, like we've done with a number of events around the city, like the Liverpool Giants, for instance, when we did that, the members of Ajax Liverpool come together and we say, how can we help our city even further than what we do? We do a number of, you could call them outreach projects to help the community with free broadband and various different projects. And we said, we've got the Homecoming, why don't we put a number of free Wi-Fi masts up around the city? We already have quite a lot already. The Baltic Triangle, Lime Streets, Everton, Bold Streets. So why don't we actually reposition these masts in a way that they were along the route of the Homecoming and then give the 750,000 people who want access to it, who many of them probably may not have enough data on their package, free internet. And that's what we did. So we set up a unique Wi-Fi for that purpose.
So Ajax Liverpool doesn't make any money from this. All the other companies, you just bandy together, change the masts, as you say, and the free Wi-Fi just happens.
Well, that is, and it's a voluntary project. Nobody makes any money. 364 other days of the year, we are still providing free Wi-Fi along the streets I've just mentioned, and that is expanding. We're just doing the Cunard building at the moment in terms of the landing stage at the back of that. So visitors can come off the cruise ships, walk into Liverpool, and straight away get free Wi-Fi. So all this is provided free of charge because this is what an internet exchange does. Ajax Liverpool being an internet exchange for the Liverpool community region, this is what we should be doing to help the area.
Now, the Metro Mayor, Steve Rotherham, one of his main visions is to try to make the Liverpool City region the most digitally connected in the UK. Are you part of that initiative? What do you think of it?
Sadly, we're not part of his initiative. We have our own initiative. I feel our initiative, which is to create an inclusive, open, fair and transparent network for everybody to work together to solve the region's problems, is the way to go. And that's what we're doing. And we started life back in 2015 and we've made incredible progress so far. And we've achieved lots of different things as world firsts. Things like the Hibernia cable, the transatlantic cable across into Southport and so on. Some of those things alone that, the other team, should we say, have talked about for many years that we've actually achieved. So we've already achieved these things. We're moving forward with a lot of local initiatives and we hope that we can keep that pace up.
Now, you mentioned the big transatlantic fibre optic cable, which carries internet traffic between the UK, North America and the rest of the world and comes in at Southport. Now, Steve Rotherham is keen on the region taking advantage of this. So shouldn't his way be the way forward rather than you doing your own thing on the sidelines?
Well, we've already done it. That's the thing. It's already in. It's installed. It's up and running. The cable came into the Baltic Triangle in April this year, 2019. And that's it. We have one of the major providers who have announced it on their website and included us as part of the major internet traffic maps, which is great. So, but to be honest with you, Mick, I think that cable 5 years ago was probably not as important, was important, more important perhaps 5 years ago than it actually is right now. And that's because the internet has changed. And I think if you were in the other team, then they, 5, maybe 10 years ago, are correct in saying, yes, this mega cable that comes into the city is a great asset. However, that isn't any longer, which is why when we did it in April, it wasn't a huge celebration for us. It was another route over to America. It's a underground cable that goes from Southport to Dublin, from Dublin to Belfast, and over to Boston, and over then to New York. But the internet has changed, Mick, and it's changed our last 5 years with Facebook, with Twitter, with Instagram, with all the major content networks like Netflix and BBC iPlayer and so on. They're already based in the UK. We don't need a piece of wet string under the sea now to connect to them, which is what the other team want to do. Instead, because the content is already here, we just need to actually connect Liverpool up better. And that's the problem. The UK actually has some really good infrastructure. It's just Liverpool hasn't. So we don't need to think about how can we get better, faster access to America. We need to talk about how can we get better, faster access to our homes, our businesses and our schools. And that's what we're doing next.
Have you made this point to the various politicians in question?
Yeah, we've tried to secure meetings with them, and they obviously believe in a particular way forward. To be honest with you, being perfectly frank, they've decided to bring in a consultancy from Manchester, which charged the taxpayers £50,000 to produce a report that we could have given them for free, to tell them that the city needs to borrow millions of pounds to put infrastructure in, which actually we've already either put in or are putting in, or the city already has. One of the great things Liverpool City Council did in the 1990s is they put an underground fibre network around the city that circles the city for the traffic light network and the CCTV. So all the traffic lights can talk to each other, the police can control them, that sort of thing. But there's tons of spare capacity on that network. So Liverpool already has the answer. It's underneath our feet. What needs to happen is we need to connect it up. And that's what we're doing with the council, which is moving forward. It's progressive and it's the way to go. And it's going to be a neutral network. So one day, once it's all done, we can bring a fibre optic to any business, any home within the Liverpool Community Region. And it can be from any provider. And, you know, that makes it an open, transparent network. It's not a monopoly like we have now. And we don't have a single provider offering us or telling us we need to take this package or these terms and conditions or whatever, or what's even worse, bringing it in from America, which means President Trump deciding how Liverpool's internet will operate according to his policy.
Well, that's a controversial thing to say, isn't it? Because, I mean, sort of Trump might not be in power then, it might be someone else. Why should he be bothered about what's coming into the UK at Southport?
Well, we're seeing it already with his policies, his trade policies. I don't need to say anything more on that. You know, he understands the internet as the, you know, internet and data is probably the new oil. And if he can control that, he can control a company's politics. You know, so, you know, I think you'll be very careful that, you know, if you start bringing cables across the Atlantic and saying, oh, we're going to send all Liverpool's internet to America, like the other team want to do, then, you know, you put Trump and the American agencies in charge of our internet. And I think the other team don't understand that. They don't understand technically how this stuff works. I don't want it like that. I want the UK to have its own. And that also includes not routing us through Manchester or Manchester firms coming into Liverpool and telling us what to do or how to do it. You know, Manchester's a great city, but I want Liverpool to be greater.
Aren't you in danger of sounding a bit parochial there? Surely the business should go to the person that puts forward the best pitch rather than base it on geography.
Yeah, but I think, remember what Ike Liverpool is all of the region's providers, starting with the small businesses, they've come together. We want the best technical long-term solution that, you know, we've all got families and kids who, you know, will inherit this stuff in the future. And, you know, we all want to do the best for our region, not a American corporate PLC company who really is only there to benefit its shareholders. Well, our shareholders, which we don't have any, of course, because we're non-for-profit, you know, our stakeholders is our community. So the beneficiaries of what we do is the people of Liverpool, not some American shareholders of a faceless company. And that's the big difference here.
What other stuff have you got planning for this area? For example, you told me the other day about installing environmental sensors on Bow Street in Liverpool City Centre. Just tell us a bit more about that.
Yes, so hopefully your listeners have been or kept track of the talk in London and Manchester about the problems with the emissions from cars, especially diesel cars, and what's gone on with the Dieselgate scandals and everything else. So with that problem, And with the UK now breaching the limits of the European legislation, London itself is a major problem for emissions, but Liverpool as well in certain places. We're now working with the City Council to install environmental sensors on the likes of Bold Street, so that under a voluntary programme, because we're doing it for free as part of what's called LoRaWAN, which is a Internet of Things network. If people Google Internet of Things, they can find out more. What we're installing with them is the ability to monitor air quality levels in real time. And they can, because people, if you don't know already, the council are looking to pedestrianise the Bold Street area. Wouldn't it be good to look at the levels street by street to see what the air quality is and then to take action? Because, you know, what if you're a city planner in the council? What if you're looking at redoing the roads and the infrastructure around Liverpool and actually could see where the biggest emissions are, where they're coming from and the hotspots in real time? That's something which is probably gold to these planners. So I think, you know, it's a great project. It's something we're doing with the community as well. We've involved universities as well locally and local technologists and engineers who are helping put this stuff together.
So when will that be live? When will it go live?
There's been no date set of yet, but in the next few weeks, we're putting some of the key infrastructure in place to allow that. But to be honest with you, the infrastructure we're putting in place, we're looking at the much bigger picture as well, which is one day I'd like to see the sensors on all the major arterial routes through Liverpool, not just, of course, Bold Street.
Is this kind of initiative only happening in Liverpool?
Manchester have got some trials going on. Also, London, of course, already have these sensors. They're called NOx sensors, which measure the amount of noxious oxide in the air. And, these sensors are not something new. Measuring air quality is not a new thing, but measuring in real time, measuring on a very local basis, street by street, and actually the local authorities having access to that data and then making that data open so anyone who's interested in accessing that data can build graphs, real-time graphs, build applications around it, warning signs, anything they want to. By giving and opening up the data to everybody, then that means it's a much better thing. So I can see one day the whole region may be using this.
With your Baltic Broadband hat on, just talking about broadband providers in generally, they haven't got a great name as far as many businesses in the city are concerned. Many charge big fees for low speeds and poor service. So what makes you different to the big boys?
So many providers probably resell the likes of BT services and they water it down a bit, like taking a keg of ale, water it down a bit more and a bit more. And then by the end of it, the beer just doesn't taste right, does it? We are the brewery. We take it direct to the end user and we sell it at a low price. And we sell at a price that we can still make a profit from. But more importantly, we can give our customers an excellent service from a local company. And one of the key ways we do that is we only offer a one-month contract. So our customers can get rid of us at any point they wish. It puts us on notice from day one that you mess me around, you do not deliver the speeds, and you are out. And that was my decision to do that. So it works extremely well, and that should be seen as a sign of confidence from our point of view that the service we deliver is exceptional and stays exceptional all the way through our relationship with our customer.
And on a broader level, are you confident? You were quite critical of the Metro Mayor Steve Rotherham before, but are you confident that our digital connectivity will overtake that of our rivals as he wants, both in the UK and abroad over the next 10 years? Or do you think we're too far behind?
I think we are coming from a place where we are very behind other cities, sadly. I myself get calls, several calls a week from incoming businesses who have probably had enough of London, want to relocate. There's some superb talent here on Merseyside, and they know they can probably halve their costs, access good talent, and obviously create not hundreds, but thousands of jobs in our region. So I want to make help that possible. Obviously, I'm not a politician, but from a digital point of view, if I can give them access to that infrastructure they need, then that's at least one less barrier to do. We did that with Channel 4. We helped. We worked on the Channel 4 bid with Liverpool City Council. Sadly, they never came to the city. It wasn't because of digital infrastructure, as we know. However, the next Channel 4, whatever that be, government agency, big business, whatever, I want the city to be ready. To answer the question, you're asking me to wave a magic wand and to say, you know, will we be ready? When will we be ready, sort of thing? I want to work with the Metro Mayor, and I want us to all work together in harmony. And the sooner that happens, the better. And the sooner we can make much more progress than we are now. I hope personally that we can make enough progress that in the next 2 years, we can at least be up to the same level as Manchester. But I've got a 20-year plan, and I know what needs to happen in that time. And I need support from everybody. This is Ajax Liverpool. I need support from the public, who can maybe come to us as volunteers to help us. I need support from politicians, the local councils, everybody. I have support from central government. I went to the Houses of Parliament. I met with, back then, Matthew Hancock, the digital minister, and he was absolutely in support of what we wanted to do. So I think it's a case of us as a region, let's get together around the table. And, you know, Mr. Rotherham has got his own strategy and what he wants to do. And I believe we can help him get to that. So let's hope we can resolve any differences between us. And in fact, let's just have one team rather than two, all batting for the same team. That's what we need.
Incredible work there from Matt. I mean, Mick, listen, it's critical that Liverpool has a good and fast broadband connectivity, as we simply cannot be left behind from a digital perspective.
Yeah, and it seems from what Matt said anyway that we are a little bit behind other cities. But he seems to be, you know, fairly confident that that will improve in the future. And I know he wasn't totally complimentary about Steve Rotherham's vision for the future, but nevertheless, I think people are aware of the problem, and it's just how we get to that stage that's critical, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk recently about how important it is to be digitally connected. But I mean, if you think about it, there was a recent report on, I think it was on Prolific North, that said that Leeds had attracted the most investment in the North. I mean, we are lagging quite far behind, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the figures, at least as represented by the Prolific North website, Leeds apparently attracted the most tech investment of any northern city in 2018. And just listen to these figures here, Mark. Leeds got £108.8 million in terms of tech investment, well ahead of Manchester, which was eighth on the list. That's just under £60 million. Then Newcastle on £31 million. Then Sheffield and Liverpool on £7.8 million. So we've got a long way to go to reach the top of that league, as it were, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got an awful long way to go, and we simply cannot be left behind in that respect, especially in an area like the Baltic. I've been catching up with another local entrepreneur, Jack Brewitt, whose growing chain of cafes, 92 Degrees, has opened up another branch on Jamaica Street, and he has big ambitions for the future. Tell me a little bit about the backstory behind 92 Degrees.
Okay, so 92 Degrees was set up 4.5 years ago, and we opened our doors on 9th of January 2015 on the corner of Hope Street and Harbin Street opposite the Philharmonic. And the way it came about was a bit of a strange one. I was working on a building site there, just ripping out the building, just doing any work I could to get any money to pay for the life I wanted, really. And I met a close friend, actually, who worked at a technology company around the corner, and he wanted to have a look around the building site. So we got to the corner where we are now, and he said we could build a coffee shop here, and I said straight away I'm in. So from there, we 6 weeks later we opened our doors to our first customers, and I kind of remember thinking that we'd made it when I think our first day's takings were £254, and I thought that we'd absolutely, you know, we've made it. We couldn't, we were just geniuses. Not realising that obviously we probably made a very, very big loss that day, but we grew from there. And it wasn't just me and John who started this. It was John's business partner from his technology company, Andy, and Chris as well. We always had other businesses and jobs that we worked in. And that sort of led us on to learning other sort of skills within the technology side of things, in marketing, sales as well for myself. While we were working those other jobs, we were always looking for other sites. I was always very focused on finding other sites, and I think the other guys had so much other stuff on at the same time that it was very tricky too. We came to a sort of agreement that I was going to try and take it forward myself, which was great, but I also needed some money to do so. So I needed to work another job. Part was working for them in their technology company, and then also was working at a social media company in Manchester. And that was those are the things that gave me enough money to be able to put into this business, to be able to grow and make us sort of where we are today with our three sites.
I think you're being very humble, because I know that your career in the social media stuff was very successful. I mean, obviously you'd established this coffee shop in the background, and you had an incredibly successful career. I just want to explore how that experience working in other industries helped you to shape the way you do business now, and tell me a little bit about why, when you finally sort of took the plunge, as it were, you jumped back into the coffee industry.
Yeah, I think working in the technology industry and the creative industry to start with, I learned so much. It was a small company, and we took it from, you know, dealing with small independent businesses to global businesses, and it took me all over the world, which was incredible. And that led me on to meeting the company that I met in Manchester that hired me as well. And I think one of the things that I enjoyed in both industries, technology and the marketing side of it, were we would always find places to meet and chat. And one of the things that I loved doing was meeting and chatting with people. And I realized that, and it took me a while to realize why I loved 92 Degrees, but this was one of the main reasons that I realized my love for 92 Degrees was because it was a place that allowed people to come meet and chat and have a nice cup of coffee, basically. And it can be anything from meeting regarding business, but it can also be meeting with loved ones and friends and whoever else, you know. That's something that I really, really valued. I think when I look back at my time, especially in the marketing business I worked for in Manchester, I progressed very quickly there because I could chat and I could sell. And I think I learned a lot from that about looking after people. And I looked after a lot of clients when I was there, and which I enjoyed. I enjoyed finding out what people wanted and giving them that. And I realized again that is what 92 Degrees does, just on a much smaller scale. We cater to what people want. If it's a coffee, if it's a tea, if it's a sandwich, whatever, that's what we do. And I think it just sort of all came together when realizing how lucky I was to be part of 92 Degrees from the start, and that I could potentially grow this business to a place where, you know, where I am now is I can work here full time, which is just brilliant.
Tell me why you ended up in the Baltic then. Why are we here? What is it about the Baltic that you think was attractive to you to open a business in?
Well, I've always been familiar with the Baltic. I came down here for many meetings, and there's some amazing companies here. I find some of the creative businesses here unbelievable. I really, really do. Some of the stuff they're creating is staggering. So I've always been interested here. And when the space became available, this is last 2018 June time, I was really excited to potentially be able to put in a 92 Degrees there. And lucky enough, the managing director of the Baltic, Mark, he agreed to meet with me and pitch my idea of 92 Degrees growing into this site. And amazingly, he accepted us, and it was a really, really big step forward for 92 Degrees. One of the reasons I was so excited about this is it kind of brought me back to a feeling of when I was working in the technology business that I spoke before, is I was suddenly being the facilitator of conversation within the creative industry, and that leads into the technology and the gaming and everything else that's here, which is so exciting. So I really was so keen to take this space on and, you know, provide great coffee to all of the Baltic sort of tenants, really.
I mean, space is obviously at a premium here in the Baltic, as you know, and we've spoken to Mark previously about how important it is to manage that space properly and to have spaces like this still available. How important do you think it is to have spaces where people can meet and do business?
It's hugely important. Small to medium-sized businesses fund this country, and the fact that we can help with that as a small business ourselves, and we can create a space that facilitates that conversation between businesses so business can take place is so important, and something that I'm really proud of to say that 92 Degrees helps. It's what the Baltic Creative have created is a space where just brilliant companies can work from. And one of the things that we're really proud of to be part of the Baltic is 92 Degrees is the place where they can bring external businesses from the Baltic, but they can also meet themselves, you know, in here as well, with a nice cup of coffee and a sandwich. So it's excessively important for small businesses, medium-sized businesses, even large businesses, to have somewhere to meet, and it's something that 92 Degrees feels very strongly about. We'd experienced out in California a huge drive in the coffee shop culture, and that's where people met for business, as I mentioned before. And we came across a business out there called Sightglass, which is a similar type of business, roastery coffee shop business, and we thought that we should be showing something like that in Liverpool. We should have something like that in Liverpool because it's a great idea, and the people of Liverpool love something a bit wacky. They always do. So we thought it would be a great idea, and we just decided to teach ourselves. We bought a roaster between us and just started. And we actually have the old roaster that we have in the Baltic as a sort of reminder of where we've come from. You know, it was a 2 kilo roaster, and now we roast on just over a 6 kilo roaster. So we've trebled in size. But it was just, yeah, we thought we wanted to do something that was a bit more exciting than just opening a cafe. We wanted to import coffee from all over the world and roast our own blends, roast single origin coffees, and give people the experience that we were lucky enough to have when we worked out in California for a little bit of great tasting coffee.
So talk to me a little bit about the future and any kind of plans for you to expand and you know, just how do you see the future going for you?
Yeah, we are now up to three sites and obviously the roastery as well. And I feel that one of the things we're after is to build another store in Liverpool for sure. We're looking at a few different locations at the minute, which is very exciting, and we hope to have one within the next couple of months. And then my plan is really to start opening into other cities. We want to open another roastery in another city and you know, sprout up, if you like, another couple of coffee shops from that roastery, so we can supply local businesses with our coffee as we do here, and also supply great spaces for people to meet as well. So that's our next step. We like I say, we want to open another shop first in Liverpool, and then we'll start to look elsewhere. We've got a few cities that we're looking at all up in the north, and we're going to see how that goes. But it's very, very challenging finding sites that you think will work in cities that you don't know as well. One of the things that has been so great about being born and bred in Liverpool is I know the city well enough to pick sites that I believe people will go visit.
Do you think it's important to fly the flag for Liverpool, as it were? Do you think the fact that you are looking to expand that side of it is as an ambassador almost, you know? Do you think that's important?
Yeah, I've been here all my life, and I'm very proud to be from Liverpool. And I really do want to shout about 92 Degrees as being, you know, it's made in Liverpool. And I think Starbucks do it to a certain extent. You know, they talk about being from Seattle. That is something that they're very proud about. They're proud of, and I think that we can do that in the UK, being, you know, born and bred in Liverpool. But you know, taking our experiences elsewhere is a good thing to do, and hopefully we can show some other cities across the north of England how little 92 Degrees from Liverpool roasts and blends coffee. It's a really, really important thing for me.
Fantastic. Finally, how can people keep up with what's new at 90 Degrees and maybe, you know, get an overview of some of your products that you've got?
Yeah, so we have our website, which is just www.92degreescoffee.com, and we also have all our socials as well, which is Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, which is all 92 Degrees Coffee. So yeah, definitely give us a follow on all of them and check out our website. You'll be able to see all our products on there, and obviously come and visit us in any of our stores as well.
Jack, that's fantastic. Let's go and get a coffee and appreciate your time today. Jack Brewitt there of 92 Degrees. We spend an awful lot of time in 92 Degrees, Mick, don't we? And we both know the value of having a space like that that you can drop in and out of in the Baltic, where space is at such a premium nowadays.
And there's so many of, really good coffee bars in Liverpool now with decent Wi-Fi. So good luck to him.
Here's a question for you, Mick. When do you think the first coffee house was opened in Liverpool? I mean, according to my research.
I'd say early 19th century, maybe.
Yeah, I thought that, but it's a lot earlier. It's 1707 when I've discovered that there was a little coffee house in Water Street in the centre of town. It's Exchange Coffee House in 1707. Amazing, huh?
So there's quite a heritage in this city in some ways.
A rich heritage.
Yeah, well, it died out for a while because, let's face it, until it was, 20, 25 years ago, there weren't that many cafes where they sold burgers and everything like that. And the decent coffee shops started to come in, I would say, about 20, 25 years ago, you say that. In the 50s and 60s, you had milk bars, didn't they? But it was only, maybe 80s, 90s that they started to flourish. And now you've got tea houses as well, haven't you, you know?
I mean, I think the thing is that you could conduct business transactions and deals in a sort of teetotal state at that point, couldn't you? Because up to that point, I'd imagine a lot of business got done in gin houses and breweries. And so obviously having a drink that didn't necessarily impact on you as a physically impact on you was very important.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when I started back in the 1980s at the BBC, the drinking culture was kind of dying out then. I remember working in Cambridgeshire, and we went out every lunchtime for a couple of pints. And then when I came back to Liverpool, that was not the done thing. And that era has gone.
I mean, I think I've had one too many coffee today already, so I'm buzzing a little bit, but there you go.
Okay, well, if anyone's got any ideas for any of the features on the podcast, then just email me, mick@mickord.com, and we'll see what we can do.
And that's about it for us for this month. So all the very best, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.